there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Leanne, and thanks for allowing us to be a part of your program.
We wanted to talk a little bit about the happenings around the county. First up, COVID numbers are going down. I've noticed that some of the communities around us have started inching down into the orange. Rowan County is still technically in the red for now. But update us on how things are going with COVID mitigation.
Well, vaccination rate in Rowan County is hovering around 53%. And that's for the folks that are 15 and older that are eligible for vaccines. The older generation is much higher than that. They're probably sitting in the high 70s% that are fully vaccinated. And their numbers are creeping down. And I say they are creeping because one day they spike up and the next day they spike down. But overall, the last few weeks, we've been trending down. I anticipate that if we continue to trend the way we're going, I would expect us to be out of the red sometime midweek next week. And that's just a guess. But hopefully that'll hold true. But what the good news is it is trending down. And I think a lot of that is, one, the vaccination rate is up. And I think the unfortunate part of this is we're getting ready to go into the hibernation mode where we go back indoors. And I'm afraid it may come back up. But, you know, let's hold out for the best. And right now, let's ride the wave that they're decreasing. And we still encourage the vaccines. And I encourage people at this point, I think it's a matter of either, concern. I've heard a lot of people concerned about it. I would just recommend you talk to your doctor. They carry you through pregnancies, heart attacks, and about everything else. You trust them with that. So just take their advice. And if they advise you not to take it, certainly don't take it. And if they advise you to take it, I would encourage you to do so.
Now, one of the things that I have been most proud of our community about during this entire pandemic is how closely the community leaders have been working together. It's been absolutely amazing to me that I know that y'all have been in weekly meetings and talking on the phone every day and making sure everybody's on the same page, all the different leaders. And, there's a lot of discussion right now about vaccinations going to be available for children 5 to 11 soon. Everybody's anticipating that. But I was wondering if there's been any discussion for you and within the community leader group about how to administer those vaccinations. Because I know a lot of parents that as soon as it's allowed, our kids are going to be in line.
Thank you for your first comment that how the community leaders work together. I remember back in March when this first started in 20, I had the first meeting of all of the community partners in one room with the health department, hospital, everybody. And we've continued that throughout this whole pandemic. We don't talk about it as much as we did. But we certainly still very much in touch with each other. I talk to all of them on a weekly basis. So, yes, we are so fortunate to have the collaboration between all of the community leaders in this pandemic. And that has been, I think, the reason why we have done so well through this pandemic is because of the communication and the efforts. The answer to the question on the vaccines, the health department, the hospital, and I think the local physicians that administer these are quite in a very good position to administer these vaccines. So I think when it happens, you'll probably even see the health department take trips to the school, and get a big chunk of them at one time. Mm-hmm. The hospital has been, throughout this whole thing, the hospital and the health department have just been a tremendous asset in providing, at a moment's notice, okay, we need vaccines here. They do that. They've been so accommodating for this. And so I don't expect that to change in any way. And I expect them to just pick it up when we get to the vaccines for the younger folks. They'll be ready, and they are ready now.
Mm-hmm. I remember going to school and getting in line to get vaccines, you know, when I was younger, and I'm sure you do too. That's something that we did at school at once upon a time.
We did. And, you know, when I was growing up, that was the place where you really got your vaccines was at school nurse. I can't remember her name, but I can remember the needle. It seemed to me like it was about the size of a pool cube.
Well, I also wanted to talk a little bit about something coming from the pandemic and something we talked about beforehand, broadband in the community. Access to broadband has really been magnified because of the pandemic, but it was something that we were talking about long before, how it was a necessary thing to create a better community, open up more opportunities within a community. And your organization has been working hard to kind of figure out what the need is and figure out how to go forward to make it happen. So update us on the broadband discussion with the county.
Well, Leanne, we are very fortunate. We, you know, for the last 3 years, we didn't have to have a pandemic to realize that we really needed broadband. So we've been in motion on this from the very beginning, and it's paid off. We're in a position, in fact, tomorrow we're going to hand deliver our grant proposal to Frankfurt. We're going to hand deliver it, and we're also doing it electronically, but we're going to make sure it gets there. It's a $9.8 million project. Windstream has been the one that scored the highest. Again, this was all community partnerships. We had someone from each of the major organizations here in the county. They scored the proposals. Windstream was the one that would receive the highest score. It's a $9.8 million project. We're asking the state through their broadband money that the governor and the legislators laid $50 million aside this year, with a total of $300 million, $250 million again next year. So we're going to ask for $4.9 million out of this $50 million pool. Our application will be going tomorrow. We don't know if we will be successful. We're much farther ahead than any other county right now, just because of our efforts we've done in the past 3 years. We did a study long before the pandemic. We put the study out. So we've been, we're stepping ahead of this, and, you know, we have good feelings that this will happen. And when this happens, I think the best part of this is if it goes the way we've got it, that will reserve our ARPA funds that we can spend on broadband. That will reserve our ARPA funds to do some other things that this county and this community needs. So if this works, every household in Round County will have fiber to the door if they so choose to use it, with the exception of about 10 to 12 houses. And I mean, that is an awesome, it's just something that, you know, when I first started this job, I had that dream. Mm-hmm. And Steve Richmond, my IT coordinator, he said, I just thought it was just a dream. And well, I had to admit, I kind of thought it was too, but you know, we're so close to this. I think that thing is going to come true, and I think it'll really make a significant impact on our education, our healthcare, our economic development, and just our way of life. I think it's just I can't say enough about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know the wheels of government work very slowly sometimes. Do you know how long it will take, or is there any anticipated date for when you'll know a yes or a no with your application to get this state money?
The applications close out on the 25th of this month, which is just next Monday. So we know they close then, and I really expect it to be in government time. I would expect it to be a fairly quick turnaround. And I would think that we will know something by the first of the year, which is really not that long. We may know sooner than that. We're talking about $50 million. We're talking about each of the 120 counties would be limited to a $5 million draw on this one. Mm-hmm. So you can see the competition's pretty tough. But I think we've got a very good package put together with Windstream, Steve Richmond, Dylan Lambert, and all the other partners. we've got letters of support from all of our community partners. So we're in hopes, but you know, if we don't receive it, I'm not going to be discouraged, because they got another $250 million will be laying on the table in April. And I feel very confident that we will certainly qualify for that round of grants. And in the meantime, you know, Windstream on their own is extending their middle mile marker out. They're extending that out to 8,000 households. So what our grant would do is take the rest of the 8,000 and a little over 4,000 more. So, you know, things are in motion to get broadband anyway and fiber. So they'll be occupied till April. But we won't be discouraged if we don't get it, but we're really going to be doing backflips if we do.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Morehead State Public Radio keeps you connected at 90.3 FM and WMKY's live web stream online at WMKY.org. In-depth and award-winning local, regional, and state news, plus NPR headline news at the top of the hour. Connect on your phone or tell your smart speaker to play WMKY. Morehead State Public Radio keeps you connected to the community. Listen to WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Harry Clark, the judge executive here in Rowan County. Harry, thanks again for joining us. I wanted to talk a little bit about the agenda for the regular meeting of the fiscal court that happened earlier this week. Lots of things on the agenda. First, I want to get an update. There is road work, of course, going on, and as the days are getting cooler, I know we're trying those that will stop happening as often. Has the road crew been able to keep up with the projects that you'd hope they'd get done during this time period? And are there new projects coming up soon?
Well, Leanne, I'm happy to report that our road crew is a phenomenal crew. And we have allocated nearly between discretionary fund from the governor, flex funds from the governor, and from county allocations, nearly $1 million worth of blacktop. Will be going down this year. And happy to say that we had a road plan and we've stuck to that plan. We're changing tiles out ahead of the blacktop, and the road crews have certainly kept up with that pace. Just as an example, we have changed out over $100,000 worth of tile and along with gravel in preparation for this resurfacing. And I believe for the first time that I'm aware of, if the weather holds and the good Lord's willing and the creeks don't rise, this will be the first year that we've ever laid every bit of our resurfacing projects before winter comes. So we're actually expecting to get the $1 million worth of blacktop down, and we actually expect that to happen over the next couple of weeks. So we're very excited about that. Hinkle has been great to work with. You know, Steve Kelsey, our road foreman, has really, really just been out front of this, and it's really made a difference in the whole road crews. But that's what happens when you surround yourself with good folks.
Now, the county has been working quite some time on the new emergency medical services facility out by the American Legion, where I guess it was a building that MSU used to own. It's been a couple different things, and it's been in the works for quite some time. I know that's been a point of contention for you just because it's taken a lot longer than you expected to. Where were you at on that building?
Well, you know, for the public's information, we moved the ambulance service into that building in about June. Because it was so hot and miserable in the other place, I went ahead and moved them in. And actually, what we're trying to iron out now, we're down to decals on doors is this is where we're at. So we get decals on the door that suits the state inspector. I think they're going to issue us a permanent occupational permit. But, you know, it's been a challenge to get it done. It is a really nice facility. When we actually get it done to get the complete certificate of occupancy, we'll invite the public out to come take a look if they like. And we're very proud of it. It's a very functional facility. The ambulance service folks are really pleased. It's something that they've needed for a number of years. And so we're very, very, very pleased from the fiscal court to be able to provide them a facility that they can not only be proud of, but they want to take care of it. And so that they'll be at their best when you're at your worst.
Now, speaking on working on buildings, I know the jailer was at the fiscal court meeting, and there's a water leak down at the new jail. I call it the new jail, but how many years has it been? Maybe five?
It's about three years old now.
Oh, only three. Okay. So we got a water leak. What's happening with the jail?
Well, you know, the jail, it's like any new facility. As you know, 3 years old, it's still new. But it's got a water leak, and it's about 200,000 gallon leak right now. And, you know, they can hear it running. They don't know where it's coming from. So they've got plumbers and other folks in there. And I haven't got an update today. Yesterday afternoon, I had an update that they still hadn't found it, that they're working hard at it. You know, Wes is working hard trying to find it. And they've got the right people in there, and hopefully we'll find it soon to get it stopped. But it hadn't created any problems. Everything's still functional inside the jail. All the water's on, it's going well. It's just it's going into a drain somewhere, and it's going at a rapid pace. So, but we'll figure it out. And there's probably something bypassing that they'll get it figured out. We'll get it under control. And got about 315 inmates there, and so you know, it's we have state inmates and surrounding county inmates and our inmates. So we'll get it fixed.
Now, one of the things that was on the agenda for the fiscal court to discuss was increasing the county jailer's number of employees. I know that, when the number of inmates was down, it wasn't a problem, but it sounds like that number is up again. And how many people is Jailer Coldiron wanting to hire?
Well, he needed one individual. You know, we don't hire the individuals. We just control the number from the fiscal court. So, you know, he's capped at a certain number. So he asked for an additional one. And that's really for court cases via electronic. You know, they can actually do some hearings and preliminary stuff via Zoom. Mm-hmm. So, and they didn't really have anybody. And you're talking about multiple counties now. So there could be as many as five going on at one time. So they didn't have the manpower to be able to take those folks in, put them in front of the computer, and be able to allow them the access to the courts. So he asked if they could hire another individual to monitor that for them. And we agreed that it was necessary because the number of inmates is not going down. As you said, they're going up. And then there's so many counties involved in this jail. It's just unrealistic to have one person trying to not dedicated to doing that.
That's interesting to me. I've been thinking about the long-term impact of the pandemic on different things, and that's one of them. I know that sometimes some different courts had electronic virtual attendance for inmates specifically before the pandemic. And then it kind of went to everybody's attending virtually once they kind of halfway opened back up. And to me, it's interesting. It makes sense for a county, if the county doesn't have to pay a deputy to go to the jail, pick up the inmate, bring the inmate to court, sit there and wait until it's time. I mean, one more person in the jail is five less people on the road, really.
It's a lot safer. I mean, you know, and I know everybody's ever always heard this, but you know, your serial killer starts out in a county jail. You really don't know who you got in your county jail. So if you're not transporting them out on the road, you know, it's much safer for the safety of the public and safety for the deputy jailers. But it's also just it's more cost efficient all the way around. You're not burning up a vehicle and the manpower and all the other stuff. And it's been around for some time. It's just some chief justices didn't district, I guess, didn't want to participate in it because they wanted, you know, you can read a lot from people in front of them, you know, body language and those kind of things. And I get it. But I think most of them now have kind of adapted and learned to pick up those skills from the computer, I think. So that it's a win for everyone. And one person hiring is certainly a small contribution to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of roads, let me go backwards because there's something I missed. The fiscal court did talk about a salt bed purchase. And I know that salt, the persimmon seeds look like spoons, yeah. And the woolly worms are all black, and everybody's expecting a rough winter. How's the county preparing for that?
We're prepared for it as we are each year. We've already got 650 tons of salt. We got our salt dome full. We've also under contract for another 500 ton if we need it. It usually takes, depending on the event, but for an average, it takes about 100 ton per event. So it's a $93 a ton. So you can tell what it's costing us every time we have an event and run trucks out. But we never have enough salt trucks. We, you know, everybody wants to be first. Everybody wants their road scrape first. And we do our very best to put 12 trucks out on the line every single event we have in order to get over the county as quick as possible. And we needed that one more salt bed to put on a vehicle. One of our older salt beds was pretty bad shape. So we just wanted to replace it and put it on. So we will be able to respond to those silver spoons and the persimmons and the woolly worms when they come about.
I know people from not around here kind of look at me funny when I say things like that. But yeah. I've been following it for years and it seems to be working for me. Now, finally, we're almost out of time, but I know there are some events coming up in the community that the county's participating. I went down Main Street the other day and saw a really cool Halloween exhibit out in front of the courthouse. Once again, there's going to be a contest this year.
Oh, there's going to be a Halloween contest, a decorating contest, just like we had last year. We've already got several applicants already in it. Of course, you know, I think ours is the best, but we can't enter ourselves. You know, it'd be kind of on a bad plan, but there's a lot of folks who are really interested. They really enjoyed it last year. Mm-hmm. They're already enjoying it this year. So we're having that contest and, you know, there's some pretty good prizes. There's a night in a cabin. There's a night in a hotel. I'm personally going to donate $100 gift card and $100 gift basket. And then also, of course, the mayor, she's got her scarecrow contest going on. So there's a lot of things going on around Halloween trick or treat. There's no cancellation of trick or treat. My goodness, we don't want to go through that again. So it'll be on the 30th of October. And so everything is on. Just, you know, be cautious. Certainly be safe. You know, it may be dark, it may be raining, but for whatever, make sure that the kids are well lit up and that you do all those safety precautions that everybody tells you to do. And don't be so close to everybody.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Judge Executive Harry Clark, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, Leanne, it's always a pleasure, and I always enjoy trying to inform the public of what's going on. And, you know, we've got a great community here, and we've got the holidays coming. So let's celebrate where we're at this time, and let's keep the numbers down from COVID. And everybody have a good week.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.